Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. If you've been following the presidential primaries, you might not have heard much about the candidates' agriculture platforms yet. Our next guest, however, has been tracking the voting records and comments of candidates since we were staring down a classroom of GOP hopefuls and a handful of Democrats. Sarah Wyant is president of AgriPulse Communications. She recently presented at the South Dakota Agriculture Summit. She joins us today to discuss the rural route to the White House. Her offices are in Washington, D.C., but she joins us today from Camdenton, Missouri. Sarah Wyant, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Lori. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for being with us. Let's start with what farmers and ranchers are looking for in a presidential candidate. What are some of the key issues that they care about?
Well, we did some research as part of our project to follow the rural route to the White House, and we interviewed 750 producers from all across the country, but the highest sample was in the upper Midwest and the kind of the plain states where you see the highest participation traditionally in farm programs. And it was somewhat surprising to us that usually things like the economy come up to the surface, but the number one issue of the 750 producers of 200 acres plus that we interviewed said that they were most concerned about national security and terrorism.
Huh.
And that was about 20% of the sample, and overwhelmingly the biggest number. The second most popular selection, and we gave them several, was immigration and access to agricultural labor. And then economic growth was only about 10% of the survey size. So farm bill and issues that are directly related to farm programs was only about 8% of our respondents.
What do you make of that? What are you hearing from producers when you meet them in person that would put that into some kind of perspective?
Well, in discussions with producers, I don't think it's a huge surprise. You know, rural Americans make up only about 15% of the U.S. population, but oftentimes their concerns aren't all that different from some of the more urban voters that are out there when it comes to looking at the future of the nation. We also ask questions like, are you satisfied with the direction of the country? And overwhelmingly, there was dissatisfaction. Are you satisfied with your lawmakers? Overwhelmingly, dissatisfaction. So there's, I think, this overall angst that we picked up from so many of the people in our sample that are farmers and ranchers, and it's somewhat reflective of what you've seen with candidates drawing on so many people who want an anti-establishment candidate, and perhaps goes to explain the rise of Donald Trump, as well as the strong interest for Bernie Sanders.
So let's talk about Donald Trump for a minute. What do we know about his agriculture platform?
It's been tough to discern a lot of specifics. He gave a major speech a couple weeks ago in North Dakota to a bunch of folks with the oil industry and outlined probably most comprehensively an American First energy policy where he's going to rely on traditional sources like oil and gas. But he's also been a firm supporter of the renewable fuel standard, which of course enables increasing amounts of ethanol and biodiesel to be blended into our fuel supply up to 2020. But, you know, other than that, and his positions on trade, of which he's been very, very strong in bashing trade agreements and saying that, you know, anything that we've currently gotten with other countries, he's not going to be accepting of. And then, of course, the wall. People rhetorically, you know, chant that he's going to build this wall and try to keep people out, and that's certainly not something that's very welcome to the ag community that is very, very interested in having a stable supply of labor in order to help harvest crops and do the jobs that many others don't.
What were the surprises from the Bernie Sanders campaign that you noted as he worked the campaign trail regarding producers?
Well, I don't, you know, there weren't a lot of huge surprises with Senator Sanders because he actually had a voting record, whereas Donald Trump does not, and as does Secretary of State Clinton. So we were able to go back through, and most of his positions were very reflective of the state of Vermont, as you might expect. He had a lot of things that he said that were supportive of dairy policy, of small farmers, of organics, of course, he's a big advocate of GMO labeling, and so we were able to track those. I'd have to say the biggest surprise is that he actually voted with Republicans on one farm bill vote in terms of crop insurance, which we never would have expected, because it basically was a provision and an amendment that said that we did not want to do means testing for large producers. And that certainly didn't seem very Vermontish, but it did seem to suggest that the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee at that time, Debbie Stabenow, needed a vote from her Democratic colleagues, and he was willing to step in line with her to do so.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Sarah Wyant. She's president of AgriPulse Communications. We're talking about the Rural Route to the White House project that AgriPulse is doing. Let's talk, Sarah Wyant, a little bit about Secretary Clinton and her ag policy. What do we know about it as it stands right now?
She's got, again, a very defined list of things that she's been supporting from her voting record, as well as she actually has the policy positions posted on our website. We've tracked those. You can find them on www.agra-pulse.com as well. And we've also followed her as she's gone to different meetings with different producers around the country. So she also is supportive of the renewable fuel standard and has been consistent in doing that, even though she's talked more about new advanced generation of biofuels versus some of the traditional sources. But, again, she's also been very anti-trade agreement, given that she was active in the administration, of course, when President Obama has been advancing these trade agreements, but now suggesting that they just aren't up to snuff to her high standards. I have to say, though, Lori, that one of the things that your listeners should know is President Barack Obama said some of the same things that Donald Trump and Secretary of State Clinton are saying now about trade when he was a candidate back before 2008. So most of our sources expect that whichever candidate becomes president, that there could be some movement towards the middle when they are asked to govern and look at the trade opportunities that are out there, the economic opportunities from trade agreements, and that they might move to a more balanced approach of accepting some kind of trade agreement after the election.
What are farmers and ranchers looking for in trade? What are it's important to them, and what do they want? What's an ideal situation, an ideal candidate?
Well, I think an ideal candidate would recognize that farmers and ranchers rely heavily on the consumers around the globe, not just the 330 or so million in the U.S., and that not only does it benefit farmers and ranchers who want to sell their products and compete globally, but it benefits those who are hungry and in need of food in areas where they're not capable of producing as plentifully as we can. And it impacts workers who are in the factories and manufacturing food products, the value-added things that get processed in the U.S. after they leave the farms, and then create jobs as they move on rail and truck and barge out of this country.
Hmm. What are your hopes for vice presidential candidates? Are people you're hoping will rise to the top on either side of the ticket?
Well, I'm sure we've heard many of the same names you have. And it's not really our personal decision to weigh in on one or the other, but, you know, there are several that keep surfacing. I think the recognition that Elizabeth Warren was at least being vetted by the Clinton administration, Secretary of State Clinton, I really see that as maybe a long shot, but there's several good governors on Trump's side. Newt Gingrich has been mentioned. I mean, there are a lot of different names that are circulating right now, but those who are really in the know aren't going to be confessing quite at this point, so I think it's a little too premature. And you have to remember that historically the VP pick hasn't really had a huge impact on who's going to win one way or the other, but it could in this case, especially for someone like businessman Donald Trump, who's not had congressional experience, it could make the difference in how he relates to members of Congress.
And farmers did not list climate change as one of their top concerns. You said earlier they listed national security and terrorism. Climate change affects them, though. Is it on their radar at all when you talk to them in person? Are they asking questions about policies going forward, or is that just not something that concerns them right now?
Well, I think there's two parts to your question. I think farmers are recognizing that climate change is happening, but they are not necessarily supportive of some of the different things that are being promoted from a legislative or regulatory standpoint. For example, if the Clean Power Plan ends up shutting down some traditional sources of electricity and then raises the costs of electricity and energy overall, that would be viewed negatively. So you have to separate policies from maybe what is actually happening on the ground. But in terms of climate change, farmers can see, look at the soybeans and the corn and the yields that are being raised in states like South Dakota. I mean, it's phenomenal. But farmers see that technology, the way we're able to breed new seeds and new varieties and use more no-till and rotational sorts of programs in order to protect the soil while we're raising better and better crops, means that they can adapt to some of the threats of climate change. So I think it's more of an attitude of it's out there, but let's deal with it and let's address it as best as science allows.
Will we be looking at another farm bill?
We're already starting to work on that. There have been discussions on Capitol Hill with some of the key farm organizations and with different interest groups. I don't know exactly whether or not we'll have one by 2018 because last one took us a couple extra years. But certainly there's work being done to lay the groundwork to make sure that farmers and ranchers have a chance to have a voice and see if there's some major changes that we want to make from the last time around or whether there's going to be more of this evolutionary versus revolutionary change that's traditionally been the case.
And you're following this all the way to the White House?
We certainly are. We'll be going to the conventions. We've worked with the American Farm Bureau Federation to help sponsor our efforts and to make sure that we're asking those questions that some of the national networks may not be asking about crop insurance or animal welfare or questions that are near and dear to the farmers and ranchers we serve, and we just want to make sure that we're getting people on the record and trying to cover it as best as we can.
Sarah Wyant is president of AgriPulse Communications. She was in South Dakota for the Ag Summit recently. You can follow the rural route to the White House on her website. It's agra-pulse.com. We'll put a link up after the show on our website, sdpb.org/Dakota Midday. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Lori. Have a great day.